Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
States and the international community to achieve a two-state solution in which Israelis and Palestinians are living side by side in peace. Since Iran openly calls for our destruction, which is unacceptable, it threatens the modern-day regimes in the Middle East. It threatens U.S. interests worldwide. But if Iran were to acquire nuclear weapons, it could give a nuclear umbrella to terrorists, or worse, it could actually give terrorists nuclear weapons, and that would put us all in great peril. So that.
Blue Monday. How are you, Blue Monday?
And what a Blue Monday it is. A Blue Monday for the world, a Blue Monday for the Savage Nation. How's your Monday? Is it a red, white, and blue Monday, or is it a Blue Monday? This is the Savage Nation. Come on, play it a little bit more, Blue Monday. So get them excited out there. Wake them up. Wake him up. So we got three major topics to talk about in the Savage Nation. Netanyahu from Israel meets with Obama. Obama says, dance the Hatikva together. Hold hands with the Palestinians and you'll all live in peace and quiet together. Then, of course, the Prime Minister of Israel says, Iran openly calls for our destruction. If Iran gets the nuclear weapon, it could threaten U.S. interests worldwide. It could threaten moderate Arab regimes. Of course, the real threat is that Israel is annihilated from the planet. So it leaves us with a question, and it's a set of questions. And they're hard questions, but you're going to be the arbiters of where we go with it. Should Israel attack the Iranian power plants now and say, drop dead to the world? Because remember, the world has said to Israel, don't exist from the beginning. The world has said to the Jew, don't exist from the beginning. The world has said to the Jew, go to hell from the beginning. The world has said, take your Bible and shove it from the beginning. So what is different about today? Let's talk about it. If Israel attacks what they can destroy of the nuclear facilities in Iran, what happens? Well, then the Iranians and the other Arabs say, you see, Israel's a rogue state. We are therefore justified in any amounts of terror or murder anywhere on the planet because they're evil. If Israel does not attack Iran's emerging nuclear capacity, she will wake up one day to 140,000 degree temperature and Israel will be gone. All the Jews will be dead, by the way, along with the Palestinians. But as you well know, the madmen in Iran don't care about Palestinians at all. That's question number one and question number two. The second issue is the swine flu cover-up. Second question is the swine flu cover-up. Janet Napolitano has tried to cover up this illness from the beginning, and she has failed miserably. First, the U.S. government tried to downplay the severity of the swine flu. Then they covered up the country of origin because we all know it started in Mexico. Then they changed the name of the illness from swine flu to H1B1. H1 bite, whatever they made it into, in order to make you not remember what it is at all. And they made you think that it was over, that Big Sis had controlled the illness by the wave of a wand, that Obama the Magnificent made the flu go away. Just as he's made the Republicans go away, he made the flu virus disappear. But now it's spreading. There are 5,000 cases and a number of deaths. It's apparently quite virulent, and it's spreading. And I told you from the beginning, rational epidemiology would have had the borders closed with Mexico, no travel between the two countries, And the disease could have been contained. I didn't say ended. It could have been contained. But Obama lied, Napolitano lied, the CDC lied, and they said to you, well, you can't close the door after the barn door after the horse is out. Of course, there were many more horses in the barn infected, so to speak, with the flu, meaning other individuals from Mexico infected with the virus. By leaving the borders wide open, they traveled. And even the Chinese government put in some quarantine. They locked visitors from Mexico in a hotel. Other countries imposed quarantines, but not the good old U.S. of A., where the only worship permitted is of the greenback, the almighty dollar. So the swine flu cover-up. On a positive note, and there is something positive for me, maybe it's positive for you, I woke up yesterday morning in the midst of being slandered, in addition to being attacked by British Home Secretary Jackie Smith, who is lying about Michael Savage, taking sound bites out of context every day and distorting them, painting a target on my back. In the midst of all of this, turning me into a scapegoat for her abhorrent behavior, the husband's porno downloads, the using the public funds for paying her own rent. So she picks on Michael Savage, talk show host, and turns me into a scapegoat the same way the Jews were picked on by Hitler, without ever asking me what I actually said, without giving me a chance to say, yes, I did say that, no, I didn't say that, here's the context in which I said it. She is trying to have me killed. She's painting a target on my back. I thought more of England. I think nothing of England right now. There is no England anymore. It's a nightmare. And yet here in America, I've had some people come to my aid. They see the bigger picture. They're not like O'Reilly. They're not like Limbaugh, who's the biggest disappointment of all. Limbaugh has turned out to be the biggest phony of all of them. Amongst all of them, he is the biggest fraud. Rush Limbaugh is a fraud. When he was accused of the drug usage, I supported him. But that man is a one-way street. It's all about him. He's in it for nobody but himself. The Washington Times came out with a great article, radio host Savage always up for a fight. They don't mean fight, get in the street, like cage artist. It means the mental battle. It means the good fight. Remember the old saying you learned when you were a liberal in liberal schools? All it takes for evil to flourish is for good men to do nothing. Right now, evil is flourishing because the good conservatives are doing nothing. The evil progressives are imposing their will on every avenue of this society. The evil progressives are destroying the CIA. They're destroying the Boy Scouts. They're destroying the Girl Scouts. And, of course, they're trying to destroy Michael Savage. So she says, the battle rages. Jennifer Harper writes in the Washington Times, and you could see the drawing they did of me and on michaelsavage.com, shouts, warnings, directives, threats, a stray explosion or two. There's a sudden silence, eloquent commentary, a plaintive oath, then a fierce laugh born of old New York. It is tough and merry, both wise and wise guy. Batten down the hatches, duck and cover. Michael Savage is on the airwaves delivering his rapid-fire message over 400 radio stations, 3 hours a day, 5 days a week. He has fought the good fight for 15 years, flanked by his 10 million weekly listeners who now consider themselves the Savage Nation. Savage Battalion, more like it. They rally behind the laser-like takes on immigration, white males, cheeky liberals, wimpy conservatives, media bias, cultural wars, porous borders, Iraq, Afghanistan, terrorism, same-sex marriage, corrupt Hollywood, junk science, big medicine, big government, scurrilous officials. Mr. Savage is generous with personal memories. He pouts. He is giddy. The loyal audience steps to the Savage drumbeat. They salute a man who is often at the center of a lawsuit, a boycott, or public outrage. I do it because I do it. I speak, therefore I am, as the Savage says. And that is it, the whole battle plan. People come to me because they know I will tell them the truth. The price is that you give your heart and soul every day. And in order to get there, you get thrown in the cauldron, he continues. And a man emerges from that cauldron and he is case hardened. Mr. Savage has been in many, many cauldrons over the years. This is a man who has described himself as to the right of Rush Limbaugh and the left of God. That's when I began a radio, by the way. Savage invented the phrase compassionate conservative 15 years ago, though it later became a rallying cry in the Republican quest for the White House. Thank you, Mr. Bush. Mr. Savage has wrangled with the Roman Catholic Church for its humanitarian support of illegal immigrants. He accused the Council on American-Islamic Relations of maintaining ties to terrorists, CAIR. He then sued them. The group in turn organized a boycott, a favorite method among Savage critics to defame him. The cauldron du jour, though, is the entire British government. On May 4, Home Secretary Jackie Smith included Mr. Savage in a list of 22 terrorists, criminals, and other undesirables who were no longer welcome in the country. She said he was fomenting hatred and could prompt inter-community tension. The event galvanized the press, not to mention the slew of free speech advocates and the Savage Nation itself. The hero was primed to be Savage, though. He called Mrs. Smith a number of names, then sued her for defamation of character, calling upon his listeners to cancel travel plans to Britain and boycott British goods. "She painted a target on my back," said Savage. Now Mr. Savage is appealing to Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton to have his name stricken from the list. Meanwhile, defenders emerged, including the American Radio Free Speech Coalition and, curiously, CAIR. That's a strange one. Then, of course, politics makes strange bedfellows. The situation is complex and full of competing dynamics, just like Mr. Savage himself. I'm reading to you from an article you can read for yourself in the Washington Times, which appears on michaelsavage.com. I'll read you one more paragraph, take a break, and then come back to this in the discussion of the Middle East and the swine flu mishandling by Napolitano and the CDC, a worthless organization. I will go on. Savage was born to a humble household in Queens, just as World War II had taken a patriotic hold of the American home front. He earned a Bachelor of Science degree in biology, taught in a local high school, and later arrived at the University of California at Berkeley, eventually to earn a Ph.D. in epidemiology and two masters in medical botany. Well, I actually earned two masters prior to that, one in medical botany and one in medical anthropology at another university. Savage wrote 20 books. His left-leaning politics shifted in the 1980s. Savage took his pronounced views to the radio realm, landing his own show in 1994. In recent years, Mr. Savage has written five political books, The Savage Nation, The Enemy Within, Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, The Political Zoo, and Psychological Nudity. You should say, my friends, that the first four were bestsellers on the New York Times bestseller list. You know what I did? I prayed to God to send me a living. Please, God, give me a living. And lo and behold, he did. I found that the only thing that matters is survival. So I learned how to survive, Mr. Savage says. Now, I will come back to read more of this, to talk about Netanyahu, Obama, to talk about the swine flu cover-up, and other topics right here on the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere. Savage.
I think that the Palestinians will have to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. We'll have to also enable Israel to...
The sound is terrible. Forget about it. I mean, you have a major press conference and the sound is worthless. Basically, Israel's in a position it's always been in. It's no different. And Netanyahu is no different than the liberals. I told you this would happen. Many of you said, oh, if Netanyahu wins, don't worry. I knew who he was. It's why he would never come on the show. You think I don't know politicians? You think it matters whether it's a liberal or a conservative? You think it matters whether it's a Democrat or Republican? You think it matters whether it's Netanyahu or Perez? What's the difference? It's all the same. They all dance to a different drummer. Now, I want to finish two things. As I speak with you, my name was bandied about in the British Parliament, and I was lied about again by Jackie Smith, who continues to scapegoat me in England. She adds insult to injury. She supposedly answered questions on the banning of Michael Savage, but she's come up with additional sound bites that were taken out of context, and she lied about me. Absolute bald-faced lied in what I said. She never listened to my show. She's getting fed these sound bites from somebody in America. And I want to say this right now, and I want you all to write it down. Just as Hitler needed the Jews as a scapegoat to get where he was, Jackie Smith is using Michael Savage as a scapegoat to placate the Islamists in England. That's what's going on here. And I'm doing everything I can to clear my name and to get justice here. So let me go back, if I can. We've got a lot to talk about on the show today. I will finish the article, reading the article from the Washington Times on Radio Host Savage. It's up on my website. And we go on. And here's where she goes. She says, "He's incredibly intelligent and very entertaining," says an industry insider. "One of Savage's best qualities is that he's an original in an industry where so many people imitate each other. Savage marches to his own beat. And for all of his brilliant caterwaul, Mr. Savage is reduced to utter tenderness at the thought of Teddy, his diminutive, fuzzy gray poodle. Quote, if anything inspires me, sustains me, it's the dog. Maybe spaghetti, too, but the dog, Teddy, he gives me such pleasure. How could anything so small have so much personality? Maybe I just don't like people anymore," Savage says. "And yet he is there for his audience, always. At 67, Michael Savage still ignores the comforting calls of the Barker Lounger in favor of a no-nonsense chair in front of a microphone. Do I know what I'm going to do, where I'm going to be in 5 years, Mr. Savage asks. And there's a passion in that voice, along with a certain wry demeanor that comes from living almost seven decades on planet Earth. Well, let me just say there's an old Mexican saying," he says. "If you want to make God laugh, then just tell him about your plans." I conclude that portion of the broadcast. We now go to more serious matters other than Michael Savage's reputation and survival, which, of course, is of to no value to liberals. Because, you see, if you want to make a revolution, you got to break a few eggs. And in order for the Marxists to have a complete and total stranglehold over the media, they've got to break this egg. Then they will come for the Limbaughs, the Hannitys, and the O'Reillys. They're much easier eggs to break because they are little robin's eggs. I'm an eagle's egg, and they're trying to break me first. Then they'll come for the little pigeon eggs who pretend to be such big, harumphing men. But when push comes to shove, they're no different than the politicians they claim to resent. We'll come back in a moment and talk about Israel, the Middle East. We can talk forever. It's been going on since biblical times. It'll go on perhaps forever. The question is, will Israel strike Iran before Iran destroys Israel? That's the only question we're asking. I don't know. I have no idea. I'm so tired of hearing them cry wolf that I really don't even know anymore. For years, they're getting the bomb tomorrow. We got to strike yesterday. If we don't do it, do it already. Do or don't do it. Whatever you want to do already. Leave me out of it.
Savage.
I indicated to him the view of our administration that Iran is a country of extraordinary history and extraordinary potential.
So was Germany, Barack. You hear this? Look, this is getting outrageous. By the day, it's getting worse. Here is Obama saluting Iran, talking about its history. No one would deny its great history as a conquering nation. Nobody would deny the great history of the Persian Empire. But what does their past greatness have to do with the fact that the Hitler of our time is now screaming that he will destroy Israel when he gets the bomb? What does it have to do with the past? Germany was a great nation also. Then Hitler came along and he said he would do certain things, and he did them. Period. He did them. Now, for those of you who are deluded and think that Iran cares about the Palestinians and they only want justice for the Palestinian people, let me give you some facts and some things to think about. Iran says that when it gets the nuclear bomb, it will wipe Israel off the planet. He has said that over and over again, whatever his name is, the Haman of our time. Over and over again, this madman has said he will destroy Israel. Now, if he cared about the Palestinians, you would think he wouldn't say that because he'll kill the Palestinians as well, number one. And number two, he'd make the ancient biblical lands uninhabitable for 1,000 years. Wouldn't you think that if he cared about the Palestinians, he wouldn't say he would destroy Israel and wipe it off the planet? He doesn't care about the Palestinians. He wants to set off a world war, bring about worldwide destruction, and in his sick, distorted, twisted mind, bring about the entrance of the 12th whatever, Mahdi. Again, in other words, peace on earth is going to come only when everyone's wiped out. I'm sure he would be invited to give a speech in Parliament. I'm sure Jackie Smith would find no offense should the Hitler of our time, Ahmadinejad, wish to speak before Parliament. The liberals would get on their hands and knees, and they'd lick his boots. Jackie Smith would lick his boots. Instead, she picks Michael Savage as a scapegoat because she knows I'm powerless. Would she stop Ahmadinejad from saying he wants to wipe Israel off the map? No. He'd be welcome into England. Merry old England. Look what it's become. Just as Hitler needed the Jews as a scapegoat, the Labor government under Jackie Smith is using Michael Savage as a scapegoat to placate the Islamists in England. Everybody knows that. They're distorting what I said. They're twisting what I said. They're taking my words out of context because there are no consequences, they think. I'm only a talk show host. After all, I'm not the Hitler of Iran. There are many other people I could ask if she would ban because they might cause intercommunity violence. What about Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's reverend for 20 years? He said the white man created AIDS in the laboratory and gave it to blacks. That might create intercommunity violence. He said many things that have caused intercommunity violence. Is he allowed into England? Sure, they would lick his boots in England. Jackie Smith would lick his boots. She'd clean his fingernails for him. Don't you see what's going on here? I have nobody defending me. Yeah, I had to hire a big lawyer, which I've done. Great cost. Top firm. Here are the Thomas More Law Centers doing what they can. And there are talk show hosts who have lined up on my side. But look at Limbaugh. Look at Hannity. You know, I would say shame on them, but I know that men like this, these minstrels, but I don't want to talk about this anymore. I want to talk about the Middle East. I want to talk about Janet Napolitano's mishandling of the swine flu epidemic and how she's getting away with it. I want to talk about the worthlessness of the CDC, where there are only politicians, not real public health experts anymore. Sure, there may be some downstream in the, you know, who do the data collecting, but they have no power. The only people who rise to the top of any government bureaucracy are worthless politicians. They're skilled at lying, so they think. New York City, WOR. Dan, go ahead, please.
Hi, Mark. I want to tell you, don't pay attention to his own news conferences. I have, behind closed doors, I have first-hand information about Netanyahu saying countless times, over and over again, the Jews will take the future in their own hands. The whole news conference, what you saw was a show that Netanyahu was prepared for weeks and warned he should behave normal and talk like all these diplomatic
people. But Dan, I don't know whether you have information or not, but the question is, Israel for 2 years has been saying Iran is about to get the bomb, and every day Iran gets a larger number of centrifuges. Every day the Hitler of Iran mocks the rest of the world. Why should Iran stop when no one has done anything to them yet?
Kept saying it was one person, and this is Bibi. No one in the Olmert government and no one in all these leftists in Israel ever dreamed even of taking action. He ran on this, and he was elected on this issue.
Yeah, but don't you think Obama read him the Riot Act today and said that you're not going to do it? We're not going to let you even fly over Iraq?
I read it. He gave it like he gave him the green light, and I'll tell you why.
Wait, hold it. You're alleging that you believe that behind the scenes Obama gave Netanyahu the green light to go ahead?
Not behind the scenes, but I'll tell you what I mean. The first time in the history of the creation of Israel, there's a new alliance between Israel, Jordan, Egypt, and Saudi Arabia to go against Iran. Netanyahu only wanted to check the waters, I would call, to see how Obama is acting.
No, let's explain to the audience what you just said, that Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Jordan actually want Israel to take Iran out, but explain why.
They form an alliance together to go against Iran. They know that Israel is capable of doing it with the airspace of these nations without the U.S. green light or the U.S. red light. What will happen after that is the U.S. will become irrelevant in the world because of Obama. That's what will follow.
Interesting. Well, where is Israel going to get its weaponry from, if not the United States? Who is it going to get it from?
I think they have 80 nuclear weapons. I think that's not a problem. The thing is...
But to rearm Israel in the future, the F-A-18 Hornets or the next wave of fighter planes, Where are they going to get them from if they alienate this administration?
I believe that if someone looks closely in the history of the last 6 years, it was God's will that the USA should stand with Israel. And now it seems that the God's will is that Israel should start to be together like an adult. Stop relying on the U.S. And the U.S. itself...
Well, you have a competitor in the Middle East who says, not only do I not like you, but I want to destroy all of your people. Ahmadinejad has repeated that over and over again. He has said he will destroy all the Jews of Israel. Did he not say that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so now if he does launch a nuclear weapon when he gets one onto Israel, does he not kill all the Palestinians as well?
If he launches the first one on Tel Aviv, then Gaza is like 20 minutes drive from there. So absolutely.
Yes, so he kills hundreds of thousands of Palestinians as well. So what does this have to do with a Palestinian state? The answer is nothing, because the nuclear weapons would poison the earth forever or for a long period of time and make it uninhabitable. Therefore, Iran has no intention of working towards a Palestinian state. They do not want a two-state solution. They want a world war. We all understand this is a madman.
He says behind closed doors, Bibi, that he sees Ahmadinejad like Haman, like Nebuchadnezzar, I don't know how you say it in English, and like the Babylonians. This is his worldview. The whole conference today was—it's only for the media. It's a show.
Of course, all of these are media shows. But let's just conclude. You say that behind closed doors, Netanyahu, in your opinion, said to Obama, "With or without you, we're going to strike Iran's nukes."
We have no allies in the Middle East. We don't need the USA.
Wow. Well, I know that Egypt is terrified, Saudi Arabia is terrified, the Jordanians are terrified of Ahmadinejad. They know that if this man gets any fatter, he will dominate the entire Middle East because he's trying to create a new Persian Empire. Everybody understands that who studied the history of the world. So, I don't know, Dan, what you know and what you don't know, but I appreciate you calling the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Any topic is fair game, not just the Middle East. How about the battle between England and Savage, where a whole nation turns on one man, and it's one man against the nation? You think it's easy on me? Trust me, this is the greatest trial I have ever had in my life. To be unjustly and unfairly lied about and accused on a daily basis by an entire government, without my government taking my side, is perhaps the most difficult place a man can find himself in, short of winding up in a... slave labor camp in the ex-Soviet Union. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Obama meets with Netanyahu. We've got the CDC messing up the entire swine flu epidemic, a worthless organization, in my opinion. We've got Homeland Security that covered it up, downplayed the severity of the flu. Then they covered up the country of origin. They accused me of racism for saying it began in Mexico, and everyone knows it began in Mexico. That became a racist statement to these psycho-liberals who kill us all. Their political correctness will kill us all as it is. It's destroying the heart and soul of this country. They came after the Boy Scouts, this beautiful, great organization, because the Boy Scouts stand for something true, and they build character in a boy. The vermin came after the Boy Scouts. They politicize every organization in America. That's why America is weak now. That is why we elected an imposter to the presidency. An inexperienced imposter is running America. The most powerful man in the world is an inexperienced community organizer from the Chicago backwards. How did this happen? Because America is a weak nation. Its character has been almost entirely wiped out. The radical left has been on a warpath for 40 straight years, and it has infected the body politic to the point where I don't think the body can recover from the psychic flu of its soul, of the soul. I don't know if this country can ever come back. The only way this country can come back is if each and every man, woman, and child in this country recognizes that it has to come back from within them. What is a nation but the people? And when the people are weakened by pornography, when the people are weakened by entertainment, when the people are weakened by a constant feed of sluts from Hollywood, when the people are weakened by sports in their head, what are they? They're nothing. There's nothing. They shall disappear from the earth like fluff in the wind. And our Islamist enemies know that, and they sense victory. They sense victory. They come here and visit, and they see morons, men walking around in Bermuda shorts, stuffing their faces with hamburgers on the weekend, incapable of defending their families, incapable of defending their nation. The only way this country can survive is if each and every man, woman, and child understands that the future of this nation is within their own soul. It's not outside. It's not in the government. It's in you. You have to strengthen yourself. You have to find within you the greatness that this nation once was. You have to reconnect with the geniuses who created America. You have to recreate in yourself the labor of your ancestors in order to come back to your own humanhood. And then the nation will find the politicians to lead it. Right now, Obama is the perfect politician because he is an imposter. Because we are a nation of imposters. Everything is fraudulent. From top to bottom, we are a fraudulent people. You have phonies in Hollywood who pretend to be heroes. The heroes are vilified and the phonies are held up as heroes. The wild men in Hollywood all pretend to be outsiders, wild outsiders. Blow dope in their every day, blowing dope in their lungs and going a Larry King to play wild men in the movies. But behind the scenes, they're quaking leaves. And they vilify the real men. They vilify the real women in this country. They spit on the real people in this country. You're the real person. What's happened to you in this country? The last administration sold out virtually every factory that they could put on wheels and ship over to an airport and send over to China. That was your George Bush Republican. Virtually every aspect of America has been gutted out by Quislings looking for the bottom line. So where is America? Does it exist anymore? Your Department of Homeland Security won't even call it a war on terror anymore. They tell you to prepare for international troubles. But they want trillions of dollars to fight the war on something or other, but it's no longer called a war on terror. They're renaming everything. Swine flu became a new name. Then they told you you had nothing to worry about. Then they lied and said, although it started in Mexico, there's no reason to close the door, the borders to Mexico, because, well, they used some phrase that made no sense. A fifth grader with any logic in their mind would have known the president was lying and Napolitano was lying. When they said to a man, they said the same thing. Well, there's no point in closing the barn door when the horse has already gotten out. Yeah, but there were more people infected with the disease still in Mexico. So you stop them from coming over here, you stop people from going there, and at least you minimize the spread of the disease. That's Epidemiology 101. So I say that, and a low-life, degenerate congressman from New York starts calling me names. Racist this, racist that. I have a real degree in epidemiology. While he was pursuing a law degree to learn how to rob people, I was actually studying epidemics. While that low-life grifter from Suffolk County was learning how to smear dirty judges in Suffolk County in order to get himself a congressional seat, I was actually studying epidemics. That's what went on. The real Paul Revere's are spit upon by the vermin. And so you think one man can save a country? You're mistaken. One man can damage a country very severely, as Bill Clinton did. Let's go all the way back to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton probably did more to destroy the soul of this nation than any single man before him. He was the equivalent of a Roman emperor, and he debased the morality of America. Young girls who would never perform such things started to do certain sexual acts. It spread like a virus throughout the young girls of this country because the president made it cool. After all, he played the saxophone and he wore sunglasses. And if he can get girls to do those things to him, what's wrong with doing it to anyone they find in a schoolyard? Then what happened after Clinton? We had a fake Republican, an imposter, a fraud, a man who was a fiscal socialist, George Bush. Him and his cronies sacked the Treasury. And as I warned you 6 months before Bush left power, you've seen nothing yet. And boy, was I right. In the last 3 months, whatever was left, they stole. They took the doors off the hinges. They stole every dime they could get their hands on and then some. And here's Obama. He was supposed to bring us change. He was supposed to bring us hope. So he takes his cronies and he puts them in charge of various things. Guy becomes the auto czar. He screws the dealers in the Chrysler network in order to make sure that the private firm that owns Chrysler, remember it's not a publicly traded company, remember it is a private firm that received billions of dollars of taxpayer money, and then they screwed the Chrysler dealers. Why? Well, you could figure out pretty much why he's building a 15,000 square foot house out on Long Island. After all, he's a man of the people, the cars are. He is a man of the people. That's why he can build a big house in the Hamptons when no one else is building them. After all, a man who's a man of the people needs a 15,000 square foot house in the Hamptons to show he's down with the people. So there's your Obama. He appoints one tax dodger after another. He appoints 7,000 lobbyists. How many did he appoint? How many hundreds of lobbyists? Was it dozens, thousands? No one knows. Said he wouldn't, did it. Now he's tacking away from the left, disappointing them. Thank God. He understood the danger of appealing to the psychopathic degenerates in the ACLU. They want trials for the men in the CIA who defended the nation against Islamists who would blow you off the planet. Nancy Pelosi gets caught in that web, her own web. She starts listening to the maniacs in the ACLU and says, I'll take on the CIA. I'm bigger than the CIA, says Nancy Pelosi. I'm so powerful right now, I can destroy the CIA. I'm so powerful. Look at me. Women fly. I'll destroy the CIA with the help of these lovely little boys from the ACLU. We'll kill them! We'll destroy the CIA! She took on a bigger, bigger battle than she ever thought she could, and she was caught in her own lie. That's what's happened. Do you think the radical left thinks that they're through? You're wrong. They're now rallying the troops, and they want Pelosi and Obama to go after the CIA to the detriment of the entire Western world. Will that stop them? No.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Notwithstanding the Home Secretary's answer, she will be aware that the things of which she accuses Mike Savage is equally illegal in the United States of America, and he has not faced prosecution there. So does she realise how ludicrous her ban is? Does she realise the disrepute she has put this country in the eyes of many right-seeing people and indeed left-seeing people in the United States of America? And does she equally plan to ban Howard Stern, Rush Limbaugh, and other middle-aged, white, ordinary American radio presenters?
Blue Monday, how I hear Blue Monday.
It is the Savage Nation. Turn off the music. That was an argument going on in Parliament today where some of the parliamentarians are on to Jackie Smith, the British Home Secretary, and the fact that she has turned me into a scapegoat, or is trying to turn me into a scapegoat. Now, they didn't say it, but just as Hitler needed the Jews as a scapegoat to get where he wanted to go, in my opinion, Jackie Smith is using Michael Savage as a scapegoat to placate the Islamists and to cover up her own tracks. Fact is that she makes statements that I have said as though I actually said them. She said, I said certain things that I never said, or she ripped them out of context. She brings up a thing where she says, I said kill 100 million Muslims. I never said that. and I will sue her until the record is straightened out, and you will see what this woman is doing to me. That was said in the context of, should there be a nuclear exchange with a Muslim nation? Would you rather see 100 million of them die or 100 million of our own people die? She took it out of context and said, I said kill 100 million of them. I never said that. Never said that. This is a smear campaign. This is worse than McCarthyism at its worst. Then they say, I said a certain thing to a gay man on my radio program. It was never said on my radio program, number one. Number two, the individual in question was not gay. It was another talk show host who set me up during a break on a TV show. This woman is inventing things, or she's being fed things by somebody in the Obama administration or in Media Matters, in my opinion, to the detriment of the British people. Because the truth will come out in a court case, as sure as I'm sitting here. We're also talking about Obama meeting with Netanyahu. We're talking about Pelosi's attempts to destroy the CIA. And we're talking about the swine flu cover-up in America. First, Janet Napolitano of Homeland Security tried to downplay the severity of the flu. Then she covered up the country of origin with her friends in the media. She wouldn't say the word Mexico. Then she changed the name of the illness to some technical name in order to get your mind off it. And now again, the lying government is denying the fact that it's spreading, but the flu is spreading. Now, if that's not bad enough, Brazil and China, on the top of the Drudge Report, are eyeing a plan to get rid of the U.S. dollar and moving to use their own currencies for trade. Would you ever believe you'd live in a time that a country like ours would be so weak? Weak morally, weak spiritually, without leadership? You call Obama a leader? A man who goes and gets on his hands and knees to foreign leaders? A man who apologizes for America's past actions instead of glorifying our past? Apologizes on his European tour, getting on his hands and knees to every dictator on the earth? You think that that's leadership? Yeah, if you're a left winger, that's leadership. If you hate yourself and you hate your country, if you lack character, and the only thing you have in you is hatred for yourself and your lifestyle, and then therefore you hate the country you're in, and you try to blame your country for your despicable lack of character, you elect a man like him. So now he meets with Netanyahu. And we hear the window dressing comes out. One says this and one says that. But people are speculating that, of course, other things were said, as you can imagine they were. And the issue is, it's only one issue. There's only one issue. Will Israel strike Iran and stop Iran from getting a bomb, or won't they? Now let's talk about this Hobson's choice. If Israel does not strike Iran, and Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, who, if you took the speeches he is giving in Farsi and translated them into German, it would be Hitler in the 30s. And yet he's allowed to speak at the UN. He's allowed to speak on Larry King, I guess, the American media, people who foam at the mouth and take drugs at night, you know, psychoactive drugs in order to calm their nerves because they know they're liars and they destroy the country. Goes on these shows. They don't, not one of them. I remember ABC wouldn't even ask him, did you say that you were going to destroy Israel or not? Did you say wipe it over the planet? They didn't even ask him that. I think, who was it? Mike Wallace? Meatloaf himself did it, wasn't it? I think it was Meatloaf interviewed him. It wasn't Meatloaf Jr. He's not at that level yet of placating dictators. Meatloaf Jr. is not up to that yet. It was Meatloaf Sr. So here we are. No one asks him anything. He comes in and says, I'm going to wipe Israel off the planet. And he's a statesman. He goes to the UN. He spits in our eye. Goes to Columbia University. The students don't say anything. Nothing. Nowhere. But again, here's the Hobson's choice. So Israel strikes Iran, where they're developing nuclear weapons, using whatever weaponry they have, bunker-busting bombs. Then the world goes crazy and says, oh, those ornery Jews. See that? They're a rogue nation. They have to be stopped. And anything we do to any Jew anywhere on earth and any American who supports them is justified. We can kill anybody anywhere now because look what the Jews did. They're no good. And the Christians who support them are crusaders and so forth and so on. Now, if Israel doesn't strike and Iran gets the bomb and Ahmadinejad does what he says he's going to do, and he destroys the land of Israel, kills the Jews, and he kills the Palestinians, kills a lot of Palestinians, and the land becomes uninhabitable. So there's no point about a two-state solution. There is no state. The land is poisoned. What does the world do? Oh, God, they play the Hatikva. They show Holocaust movies for about 3 days on CNN. Larry King breaks between talking to one degenerate after another. Maybe somebody would break into a ball game, God only knows, and say Israel was struck by a nuclear bomb and a lot of Jews were killed. And you hear a little music and you forget it in 3 days. You move on. And the few Jews who survive are allowed to straggle into America. And we make reparations and it's over with. I mean, that's scenario two. And Iran knows it. They know the world cares nothing about anybody. It's not just about Israel or the Jews. No one cares about France. No one cares about Germany. Nobody cares a hoot about Turkey. Nobody cares about Armenia and the Armenians. No one cares about Syria and the Syrians. No one cares about Russia and the Russians. Why should they care about Israel and the Jews? They understand that. They understand on the world stage, no one cares about anything. If a man is concerned only about barbecue, pornography downloads, and sports, that's the average American male today. Put the hat on backwards and root for his home team. Take his moronic little son to Little League and hit a ball. The enemy's teaching him how to cut a throat and rolling in trenches with a mock AK-47, and this idiot's at a ball field with a bat like it's 1894. Take a guess who wins in a battle. The boy is learning how to hit a ball, or the boy is learning how to cut a throat. I'll let you figure that one out, how that ends. That's take me out to the ball game. And if anyone stands up and speaks out against the growing Islamist threat, the entire left wing, because they're suicidal, attack that individual as an enemy of the truth, enemy of freedom, and a racist, and this and that. And so here I find myself in the crosshairs now of this culture clash on planet Earth. Because I am outspoken, because I love my country, because I'm patriotic, because I put my country first, because I say America first, not last, because I believe in borders, language, and culture, I am being vilified by the vermin in the media, vilified by the vermin on the left, vilified by the vermin on the planet, vilified by those who would have collaborated with Hitler during the 1940s to turn people over to the Gestapo to live another day. The same people are back. And after World War II, the famous pictures of the collaborators having their heads shaved, remember those? You don't even have to shave their heads anymore. They've already done it in advance. I'll be right back.
The Home Office to produce a name and shame list was a self-evident gimmick and demeaning to government, and has now produced a completely avoidable legal action which is producing splendid publicity for Michael Savage. On reflection, doesn't she think this was a mistake and the wrong way for the government to behave?
Now that's Crispin Blunt, a man worthy of the word parliamentarian, taking on this genius Jackie Smith, British Home Secretary, who in my opinion is in the pocket of somebody in the Bush administration, because she is playing sound bites that are being fed to her out of context, saying things I didn't say in order to smear me. And as I said to you before, just as Hitler needed the Jews as a scapegoat, Jackie Smith is using Michael Savage as a scapegoat with out-of-context sound bites to placate the Islamists in England. That's exactly what is going on. And I will have my day in court, and I will prove that I am correct. I'll prove that these are slanderous pieces of things I have said in order to try to destroy my reputation. I only wish that they had asked me, did I say them? You would think that in a democracy, when a man is accused, they call the man up and say, look, we have these sound bites. Did you say them? Didn't you say them? What was the context? Then you get a chance to defend yourself. But no, out of nowhere, Jackie Smith takes sound bites provided to her by my enemies in America, the Stalinists in this country, who rip off sound bites and make it sound like I said things when I didn't say them. And she takes them and she plays them and says, I said these things. This is something that would occur in the Soviet Union in the 1950s. This is something that would have occurred in China, maybe even today. I don't even know if it would occur in Russia today anymore. I think that even in Russia today, this kind of slander would not be permitted. That a man being so accused would at least have a chance to respond to the accuser. I haven't had a chance to respond to the accuser, have I? Is that not the basis of law in the entire West of a democracy? That a man gets a chance to meet his accuser and to defend himself? I haven't been able to defend myself. Instead, this woman goes on and attacks me, and suddenly she comes up with new sound bites that she didn't even have in her original accusations. Where did Jackie Smith get them from? She couldn't have gotten them in England because I don't broadcast in England. She got them from somebody here in the United States of America. Now, listen to the next parliamentarian, Julian Brazier, in 08.
If it's an even-handed approach, could the Home Secretary then explain why we've welcomed to this country two UK residents, but not citizens, back from Guantanamo Bay, who are not only suspected terrorists in Afghanistan, but also wanted on murder charges in Spain?
Ah. Uh-huh. So in other words, the Home Secretary would rather have actual terrorists than a talk show host who's actually a patriot. Now listen to 9, and you're going to get a connection here that I think starts to make sense, connecting Jackie Smith with the Obama administration. Listen to clip 9.
We have taken a position for some period of time of wanting to see Guantanamo Bay closed. In order to help to facilitate that, we have accepted back and, in fact, sought the return to this country of those that are both nationals and have previously been resident in the UK. I think President Obama's decision to close Guantanamo Bay is the right one, not solely because of the individuals there, but because of the ability that it gives us internationally to take forward the sort of values that we hold, that the US holds, in fighting and tackling terrorism.
And what are those values, Jackie Smith? Does that include the values of false accusations? Do your British values include scapegoating a broadcaster in America for your own political ends? Do your British values include making up comments that I apparently made out of whole cloth, taking them out of context? Are those the British values you're so proud of, Smith? Well, then what has Britain become, Smith? Now, I hope this is picked up by the BBC, and that my comments are played in Britain so the people in England and America can understand how I am being scapegoated by Jackie Smith and the Labour government in England. More tomorrow on this, but let's go back to some of the other callers on other topics here in America. We're talking about the swine flu cover-up by the American government. And, of course, the flu now is up to 5,000 cases with several deaths, and the Home Secretary, the equivalent here, the Homeland Security Secretary, of course, not only denied that it came from Mexico, called anybody who said it came from Mexico a racist. I did a small-minded Lilliputian congressman from Nassau, Suffolk County. Anyone who said, well, the flu didn't come from pigs, per se. It occurred in a pigsty transferred to a human in Mexico. So therefore, what you have to do in that case is close the border with Mexico. That's what I said. That's for the first step of controlling an epidemic is find the epicenter and contain those affected individuals within the epicenter. Read any book on epidemiology. You'll find out that's how it works. But now we have politicians suddenly. They're epidemiologists. So they cover up the country of origin. They downplay the severity. Then they change the name of the illness. And now the illness is spreading. But they want billions of dollars more to do more of what they do, which are have conferences on God only knows what they do. The CDC is a useless organization. It should be closed down and defunded. San Francisco John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, thanks. Seems like the CDC admitted they blew it here recently. They said the incubation period is longer than they assumed. It's 7 days instead of a few days. It seems like that would argue in favor of quarantining and closing the border.
Well, of course I was right. I was 100% right because I actually have an advanced degree in epidemiology, unlike the politicians who have no advanced degrees in anything except dissimulating things and lying about everything. They're a danger to our very survival. We lost our moral fiber. We lost our currency. What is next? We lost our borders under Bush. We're losing our language. We're losing our culture. Tell me what's next. Now we're losing our currency itself. What are you waiting to understand what I'm saying to you? Why I'm being vilified by the internationalists? Don't you understand how this is all happening at once? Don't you understand that anybody who sticks their neck out and stands up like an American and says it like it is going to be picked apart by the billionaires who want all the power in their hands? Shall I name him? Shall I name the man who almost broke the British pound? Shall I name the man who almost broke the Malaysian currency and thereby spread anti-Semitism throughout the world? Shall I tell you about his history in Hungary? Shall I tell you who he is, this wonderful, upstanding survivor of the Nazis who himself has become a Nazi? Shall I give you his name, or do you know how to spell it? It isn't Superman. It is powerful money trying to destroy Michael Savage and anybody who stands in their way.
Savage.
So the British talk about their values, the ability to take forth the international values. Isn't that hypocrisy itself? For Jackie Smith to say that British values need to be upheld and that's why they keep Michael Savage out? And what are these values? Not giving a man a chance to defend himself? Not asking the man if he actually said these things? Not asking the man to say, is this true or false, as you are accused? Is that a British value today? False accusations being held up as the truth? Smearing a man? Turning a man into a scapegoat? Is that a British value today? Keep it up, Smith, because you are dragging the nation of England into the mud. I will have my day in court, Jackie Smith, and you will find out that what you are saying I said is false. You took these out of context because whoever is feeding them to you is trying to bring you down as well, in case you don't know it. You welcome back people from the Guantanamo Detention Center as suspected terrorists and wanted for murder in Spain, and you don't want Michael Savage there, and you don't even ask me if I said these things? You see, this is what's going on. This is what is going on. She says I said this and that about Muslims. She's a liar. I stand by my words. She is a liar. They keep repeating the big lie often enough, as Goebbels said. If you repeat a big lie often enough, Jackie Smith, it will become the truth. And so you are continuing the big lie, saying I called for the deaths of 100 million Muslims when I never said that. And I want every Muslim listening to this show to understand I never said that. I said that should an Islamic nation get the nuclear capacity to go to war with us, and if it was a choice between 100 million of them dying or 100 million of Americans dying, I would choose that 100 million of them die. Is that not different than what she is saying I said? She is trying to get me killed. She is painting a target on my back. This is not an outrage. This is murder by the spoken word. She is trying to murder me by taking my statements out of context in a very dangerous time. And I can only do what I have to do to defend myself. That's why I hired lawyers that are very expensive. But I have no spokesman in England to represent me. I have no one to say, now, wait a minute, Smith, I thought that you believe in British values. What are these international values? You accuse somebody without asking him, did he say it? You don't invite for his comments? You just publish them because someone in the Obama administration sent them to you? That's a British value? You're no different than the ex-Soviet Union, Smith, the way you're functioning. You would have been very fine as a functionary under Joseph Stalin, where people were condemned without a chance to defend themselves. Now, if that's the new Britain, if those are the British values you're so proud of, then I pity you, Smith, and I'm asking all the people of Britain, if you hear any of these words, to wait until you hear the man himself before you condemn him. Focus instead on the pornography of her husband. Focus instead on the billing for various and sundry expenses at the public expense, and then you will know why she chose Michael Savage as a scapegoat. She didn't think I could fight back. She didn't think I would fight back. She didn't think I had the resources to fight back. She didn't know that I had an audience of 8 to 10 million. She probably thought I was a small-time operator in Idaho somewhere on a shortwave radio. Jackie Smith, I will have my day in court, and I'll prove you a liar and a smearer of the lowest order. And I will have my day of victory. Every dog has his day. I'm going to have my day. Now, let's go back to the other stuff we're talking about. The CDC's failure to stop the spread of the swine flu should prove to you once and for all what I've been saying to you for years. The CDC has become nothing but a political arm of the administration that is in power. It does not do basic research. It does not disseminate the truth. It disseminates politically appropriate phrases to control the population and to gull the population. The Centers for Disease Control has become a propaganda ministry for whichever administration is in power. And the CDC is no longer a useful organization. There was a time that it was. When I was a young graduate student, to get a great job in the CDC was a real goal. A goal of any fair-minded individual with a real credential. But the people who've been hired at the top level are very much like those in the EPA. Politicians acting seamlessly to promote the agenda du jour. Sarasota, Florida. Harry, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mike, you're absolutely right about the CDC. Back in the 90s, whoever was running the CDC at the urging of the Clinton administration actually classified guns as an epidemiological plague-like apparatus. In other words, they said...
Yeah, I understand. They made it like a disease organism.
Plague.
An epidemiological threat. I saw that. I said they're totally a political organization. They're worthless as disease prevention and control. They're nothing but propagandists. It's the propaganda ministry for things to do with health. I've been on to them for years. Just came out, blue-collar U.S. males lose more ground. U.S. male unemployment rate surges past national average. Blue-collar men take worst hit. Wages keep falling. So again, it's the blue-collar U.S. male who's taking it in the neck. But that's to be expected, isn't it? After all, you're expendable. You're nothing to this administration. You were nothing to the Bush administration. And, of course, guys like, remember Reich, who said he hopes that the money doesn't go to a white man? Do you remember that one? Do we have that soundbite? Robert Reich, the man who used to work for Bill Clinton, the man whose feet didn't reach the ground when he sat on talk shows. The man who said, well, this is when he was looking for a job in the Obama administration. He's cooling his heels at the University of California right now at Berkeley with some kind of teaching job, being paid some extraordinarily high wage as a professor for doing nothing but bamboozling students with left-wing gibberish, in my opinion. But he gives speeches every once in a while, Robert Reich does. And last autumn it was, before the election or right after the election, Robert Reich, the labor secretary under Bill Clinton, said something astonishingly about white males, construction workers. Does anyone remember it? Well, now he was predictive. He said blue-collar U.S. males lose more ground. Now, since most blue-collar U.S. males are of Caucasian makeup, what they really want to say is white males lose more ground. But since it was published by Reuters, in association with the Obama administration, they call it a blue-collar U.S. male. Now, it is true that there are people of other races who are blue-collar males. There's no question about it. But since the white male is the dominant race in America, and since white males are the predominant blue-collar workers, the actual headline should be white males lose more ground in this economy. Have you guys found it yet? When we find it, I will read it to you. So that it says the reasons are clear. Male sectors, male-heavy sectors such as construction and manufacturing have been hard hit. May hamper the recovery, blah, blah, blah. In the 2001 recession, 51% of all job losses were for men. It was evenly split. But in this recession, 80% of the jobs that have been lost have been men's jobs, said a labor economics professor who has studied this issue in detail. Did you hear this? 80% of all the jobs lost were lost by men. And yet, if you go to the colleges today, it's dominated by women. The largest percentage of college attendees are women. The men have been driven out of the campuses. The men are being driven off the campuses. The men are being driven out of the schools. The men are being, the little boys are being poisoned with Ritalin and other unnecessary drugs. And here is Robert Reich, former labor secretary, now a professor, last autumn.
I am concerned, as I'm sure many of you are, that these jobs not simply go to high-skilled people who are already professionals or to white male construction workers.
Oh, Robert, you said such a naughty thing. Of course, he's a white male, but he didn't want any of the money in the stimulus package to go to white male construction workers. White male construction workers. Oh, you didn't, huh? Well, maybe you'll be happy, Robert Reich, because 80% of the job losses have been men's. That should make you happy, because it hit white men even more. So that should make you very happy, Robert. You don't have to worry about a job loss. You have a big, fat tenure job at Berkeley. Huge, huge pay for doing nothing, in my opinion. Professor at Berkeley. Yeah, if it was in electrical engineering, chemical engineering, something meaningful, I could say, sure, they're worth the money. Have you ever looked at professors' salaries recently? Have you seen the kind of money these people make at state universities across America? And I used to love hearing this. Well, we have to raise the salaries for the professors in order to be more competitive with the private sector. Competitive with the private sector? There are no jobs for them in the private sector. The only thing waiting for professors from Berkeley and everywhere else is a cafe and a crazy check, unless they're trust fund babies. There's nothing waiting for them in the private sector. There are no jobs. So if you raise the salaries for these deadbeat professors in the go-go years, why not lower the salaries for these professors now? They're not going to leave. They got nowhere to go. Cut their salaries by 50%. Eliminate tenure. Give the younger people a chance. Give younger people a chance to get into the university teaching professions. Get rid of the deadwood. Cut their salaries by 50% and let them go get a job in the private sector. See how many jobs there are for them. What would Robert Reich do if he lost his tenured professorship, I wonder? Well, he couldn't get a job as a white male construction worker for obvious reasons. A, I don't think he could lift that beam or tote that barge. But aside from that, there are no jobs. So what would he do? I guess he would do some writing. Well, I think I'll take a year off as a seminar year. I think I'll travel abroad and see if I can broaden my mind and come back with a book or two that no one will ever read. Wind up in the stacks. Still writing books, are you? Books that no one reads? To be put into the stacks with all the other moldy paper in there? Haven't heard of the internet guy? Still publishing in arcane journals that no one reads in order to do the pogo stick in academia? Publish in these journals run by your friends? If you know who the editor is, you get the paper in. Or if you could be Einstein, you wouldn't have a chance of getting a paper in a physics journal today because he couldn't play ball with those in the physics profession. So Einstein would wind up being a clerk with a pencil in a bureaucracy somewhere if he were alive today. I'll be right back. Savage. Well, now the useless, lying officials at the CDC are saying that there are 100,000 people likely infected with the new flu strain. Let me repeat this. They say that there are around 100,000 people likely infected with the new flu strain in the United States alone, and that the 5,123 confirmed and probable cases and 6 deaths in the U.S. were, quote, the tip of the iceberg. Now, I'm not saying that we could have stopped the spread of the flu when it began coming out of Mexico, but it could have been contained had the border been slammed shut. But Janet Napolitano and President Obama both came up with the big lie that it's foolish to close the borders because once the horse is out of the barn. Made no sense, of course, not then nor now. They were wrong. The CDC was wrong. And now it's spreading. It's 48 states and rising. But what's really frightening, doctors, is that the number of people needing hospitalization for this flu is now up to 200. It says that's very unusual to have so many people under the age of 20 to require hospitalization. And some of them now in intensive care units. It's interesting. So it's a very virulent form of flu that the CDC completely swept under the rug, changed its name, went to Lilliputians like Larry King, who immediately said, H1V1, it's not swine, huh? It's H1N1, huh? In the years I was in Miami, I'm an expert in epidemiology. Years I was gambling in Miami, I became an expert on the flu. What is it, H1N1? It's not funny. I mean, but you have all these idiots in the media. They destroyed America. Now they're destroying our health, the health of America. First they destroyed the morality of America, then the sanity of America, now the health of America. Again, who did it? The media. Where's old Madoff? He's still in jail. His old lady's still out on the street, still shopping. So I got a shopping bag. The children are still having a good time, still driving their new cars. Where's the missing billions? Where did it go? Where did the billions go from Madoff? He's off the headlines now. I think he would be allowed into England. I guarantee you that Madoff would be allowed, and Jackie Smith would probably welcome Madoff once he's out of jail to give a kind of pep talk before the Labor government, something about currency and how to get ahead without actually producing anything. That would be perfect for the Labor government. I mean, when you got a home secretary whose husband downloads pornography, nothing wrong with that, apparently. Everyone does it. But when you bill it, imagine what a cheap piece of goods this is here. Billing it to the public, thinking you get away with it. Billing home expenses to the government. What kind of cheap pieces of work have taken these political jobs? 1-800-449-8. You know, they say living well is the best revenge. I think after the show is over, I'm going to cook tonight. I don't even want to go out. I'm under a lot of pressure. It's starting to get to me. Yeah, no, my enemies are getting to me. I'll admit it. Doesn't mean I'm out yet, but I'm taking a beating here. I'm not lying to you. Don't think I'm real happy about what's going on. I'm very unhappy about it. But the more they push me, the more I'm going to push back. The more they try to vilify me, the more I'm going to vilify them. The more they turn me into a scapegoat, the more I'm going to expose them as the liars. The more they talk about British values, the more I'm going to show that there are no values coming out of the Labor government. Apparently the only values are downloading pornography and billing it to the public expense. Or another value is to bring in terrorists from Guantanamo and call them righteous citizens. Or values are to accuse a man falsely and not even give the man a chance to state whether he actually said these things. Those are British values. Orwell warned us about the day that the labor government like this would arise. Huxley warned us about the rising totalitarianism in the Soviet Union at the time. Little did we know that this totalitarianism would appear in Britain itself under the Labor government. Always the left. Why is it always the left that brings in fascism under the guise of being for fairness and light? I remind you again, many of you don't want to know it. You don't want to accept it. I've had this argument before. We know that Joseph Stalin was theoretically a socialist. You know, it was the Union of Socialist Soviet Republic. It was a socialist dictator. 30 million Russians died as a result of him. Millions died in World War II as a result of the war with Hitler. Hitler was a socialist, just another type of socialist. People say, no, he was a right winger. Hitler was a right winger. After all, he banged the drums and wore a swastika. No, Hitler was a left winger. Hitler was a radical bohemian on the left. And he led a party called the National Socialist Party. I think it was the National Socialist Workers' Party. And the acronym for it was Nazi. But liberals don't want you to know that Hitler was a left-wing socialist. Because they're identical to Hitler. Only they don't bang a drum and they don't wear swastikas. They have many, many other tricks up their sleeves now for worldwide dominance. Sure, they don't invade countries. Instead, they invade people's reputations. They don't invade countries, but they invade organizations. They don't invade nations, but they invade the minds of people with drugs and lies. New form of domination, new form of warfare. I've been fighting it my entire life. In the early 80s, I went on a warpath against the overuse of Ritalin. I wrote Healing Children Naturally. And the book is available on michaelsavage.com. I hope you buy a copy for the sake of your children or grandchildren. Not going to change my lifestyle, but it might change your lifestyle. Might save your child from a drugging, from a misdiagnosis by an evil, evil, evil school mom or evil school therapist who says, hey, your child has ADD or ADHD. ADD, really, define that. Let's see. If Tom Sawyer were alive today, he would have had ADD. Fidgety, couldn't focus on boring stuff, pulled pranks in the classroom. That's 3 out of 4 right there. I guess he has a disease. Put him on Ritalin, dope him up, put him in a chemical straitjacket. We've got to keep those males under control. Most of the recipients, by the way, of these dangerous psychoactive drugs are boys. See a little pattern here? I do. I have for a long time. So I've always been ahead of my time, and I've always been vilified. I was vilified by the medical establishment in the 80s when I was talking about herbal medicine. They said, oh, sure. Why, that's not medicine, using those herbs. I said, well, wait a minute. 34% of all drugs are derived from natural products, including digitalis, digoxin. I can go down the list. Well, but what does that have to do with anything? Everything is nice and clean made in a laboratory. You don't want to use those natural things. Well, that was then. Today, all the doctors pretend that they care about natural things. And there are some great doctors out there, don't get me wrong, some great, good men. And they do practice both alternative and regular med. But they're few and far between. So I'm used to this. It's just that I'm older. And
warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
One of the things that we have learned is that the interrogations were not carried out by CIA permanent employees. Rather, they were carried out by people contracted to do so by the agency.
All right, let's stop this liar right now. This is probably the most corrupt woman in the history of the United States of America's Senate. Feinstein, some call her Slimestein, and her husband, Richard Blum, were exposed as total, dirty, rotten crooks. Now, if you think I'm making this up to make a friend of Dianne Feinstein, you got another guest coming. I'm not making it up. On the day the new Congress convened this year, according to Chuck Neubauer in the Washington Times, Senator Dianne Slimestein introduced legislation to route $25 billion in taxpayer money to a government agency that had just awarded her husband's real estate firm a lucrative contract to sell foreclosed properties at rates, compensation rates, higher than the industry norms. You see, Ms. Slimestein's intervention on behalf of the FDIC was unusual. The California Slimocrat isn't a member of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, who has jurisdiction over FDIC. And the agency is supposed to operate from money it raises from bank-paid insurance payments, not direct federal dollars. But documents reviewed by the Washington Times show that Ms. Slimestein first offered October 30th to help the FDIC secure money for its effort to stem the rise of home foreclosures. Her letter was sent just days before the agency determined that her husband's real estate firm, the Richard Ellis Group, had won the competitive bidding for a contract to sell foreclosed properties that FDIC had inherited from failed banks. At the same time of the contract award, Mr. Blum's private investment firm reported to the SEC that it and related affiliates had purchased more than 10 million new shares in CBRE. The shares were purchased for the going price of $3.77. Monday, CBRE stock closed at 5:14. So that's the story. There's a conflict of interest. There is no trust in the government. The government is out of control. It's run by absolute crooks at every level. This woman, according to many, many records, has been steering contracts to her husband going way back to at least 2000. In fact, I have in my hand right now in the Savage Nation from the L.A. Times from the year October 20th, 2000. And it was written by Richard Simon and Greg Krikorian. Now, remember when this was written. The following article, Husband's Business Ties to China Dog Feinstein, was published in October 2000. By the L.A. Times, before the L.A. Times fell as a great newspaper, before the gay liberal invasion of the L.A. Times, this paper was doing great investigative reporting, and they reported that Blum was doing mega business in China while his wife, a vocal proponent of increased China trade, was in the Senate. So the fact of the matter is, this is an old story. It's just that the level of contempt for the American taxpayer and the level of thievery is beyond anything that the Bonnie and Clyde of politics has ever done. Feinstein and Blum are the Bonnie and Clyde of the U.S. politics, according to some. The fact of the matter is, if you're a minority listening to this show and you get caught robbing, let us say, a bar of soap in a Pick's supermarket, or let's say you're a minority kid and you get caught robbing a gold chain from somebody. Now, I'm not saying you should rob a bar of soap or a gold chain. You would spend more time in the slammer than would Bonnie or Clyde, who apparently lifted $25 billion in taxpayer money in order to reward themselves. Now, what is the chance of Slimestein losing her job in the Senate over this, let alone going to jail? Answer, zero. Why? The Demon Cats, who are the most corrupt party in the history of this republic, will not permit a hearing into Slimestein. Moreover, the Senate rules on conflicts of interest are written so narrowly that nobody in the Senate can ever get caught doing anything wrong unless they're either a drug addict or insane, in which case these two are safe, and they will continue to pilfer and rob, as far as I'm concerned, for the rest of their days. If you think I'm making it up, read the story yourself. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. Of course, you can't call me on this because you didn't hear about it and you didn't read about it. And of course, when Slimestein was seen in front of the Senate in some kind of intelligence committee that she heads up, believe it or not, can you imagine this woman is in charge of the United States Senate Intelligence Committee, and she is now interrogating the CIA on their detention interrogation practices? Here is a woman who is as corrupt and as rotten as they come, going back to her days as a mayor in San Francisco. She's now in charge of the United States Senate Intelligence Committee. Do you understand how bad things are? It is a Senate and Congress that's totally out of control. There's absolutely no oversight of them. The fact of the matter is, in my humble opinion, Feinstein pushed the bailout so she could steer $25 billion to an agency that shortly thereafter awarded her husband's real estate firm a large and fat contract to sell foreclosed houses. That's the story according to the news. That's not being reported in your local paper because she's a lady in good standing of the left-wing establishment. San Francisco, KNEW Dawn, go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Mike. Just listening to your report about Feinstein and C.B. Richard Ellis, and I wanted to say I'm really surprised because I have a small business down here in Sunnyvale, and I leased a building from CBRE a few months ago, and now, you know, I have no idea where my money's going.
Well, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that the story came out. It said that Feinstein's bill to increase FDIC funding by $25 billion arrived shortly after the agency awarded C.B. Richard Ellis Group, where Blum is chairman of the board, a contract to sell foreclosed houses.
Yeah. Well,
now, Feinstein says she has no knowledge of the company's FDIC contract before being contacted by the reporter. There's no evidence of any conflict of interest or any connection between the senator's foreclosure relief bill and a C.B. Richard Ellis winning a competitively bid contract. Blah, blah, blah. This is not the first time the Feinstein-Blum, Bonnie and Clyde team has been questioned about this money, this kind of money. It's gone all the way back to the year 2000, his business dealings in China, her steering contracts to and from him. It's unbelievable to me. Even the left said she was steering contracts during the war to her husband's businesses. I mean, is there no limit to greed? This is like the age of the Romanovs in Russia before the collapse. San Francisco, KNEW. Judy, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I think Dianne Feinstein is one of the most crookedest people that we have in the Senate. Mm-hmm. And her dealings in 2000, which I talked to everyone about, and everyone said, oh, Judy, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't. I said, for God's sake, Blum's in China. She just passed the law or trade. What the hell do you think's going on?
It's unbelievable to me. I am just astounded that she can get away with this kind of thing. And all you've got to do is ask yourself, has their net worth increased or decreased during her tenure as a senator? It's a simple question. If you were investigating a power team in Washington, one of whom was a senator or a congressperson, the other person a business person, all you got to do is ask yourself, has their wealth increased or decreased since one of the pair came to Washington? Then you investigate what they invested in and when. And then you work it backwards and you decide whether or not there was any wrongdoing. It's very simple how you do these investigations, but we the people don't have any power over this Congress. This Congress is a totally rotten and corrupt banana republic Congress. Stewart in New York on WOR, are you shocked by these allegations about Dianne Feinstein or Richard Blum?
No, my Dr. Savage, I am not shocked. I've known it all along. Since she was put in office, she was crooked. She always has been. Her husband is just following along in the footsteps.
Woman, well, you make a statement, always crooked. I mean, you have to be specific. The L.A. Times was quite specific in the year 2000 when they did an expose on their background in business dealings, China and whatnot. And the L.A. Times in the year 2000 was still doing investigative reporting, and it was still selling newspapers and making a living. The papers have collapsed. That's what's going on in this country today. Florida, Nathan, you're on the Savage Nation. On which topic? Go ahead, please.
The Cuban embargo. You know, there are two reasons I'm against it. Number one, the hypocrisy. China has as bad a human rights record as Cuba does. They back up.
I've heard that before, but let me counter that with another argument. You're arguing that we should lift the Cuban embargo and we should reward the Castro murderers.
Correct.
Okay. What you don't know is that this is the last military dictatorship in the Western Hemisphere. Are you aware of that?
No, I don't agree with you. I think Venezuela is a military dictatorship, and I think Mexico is a narco state.
Well, okay, so you're splitting hairs. I'm certainly not a fan of Hugo Chavez. What do you think is going to result from lifting an embargo against Cuba? What would happen?
That the people, when they start seeing Americans like me get off the cruise ships, they'll suddenly going to say to themselves, why can't I have shoes like that? Why don't I have a camera? And it'll create the same kind of unrest that was created.
But, sir, right now, tourism is very, very important to the Cuban economy. Europeans go there. Canadians go there who want cheap women and cigars. If you want to get a nice college girl for $20 along with your cigar, you go to Cuba now. It's not that they don't see them. Many wonderful liberals go to Cuba now to get cheap boys and girls. You know that.
I wasn't going in that direction. That doesn't interest
me. No. Most of the good libs go to Cuba because they can get a girl for $20, about the price of a cigar. I don't understand what the benefit is here. The fact of the matter is Cuba is in a dictatorship, and it's a military dictatorship. Don't you think by opening up Cuba to trade with America, we're just simply going to prop up the Castro regime?
No, I think that Castro loves the embargo more than anyone because now, in order to get anything, his people have to go through him. If you start having different tourism and things like that, maybe it'll fragment the economy a little more, like Poland under the openness that they had. It led to Lech Walesa. I don't know whether this will happen or not. What I do know is that the Cuban embargo has accomplished absolutely nothing. We trade with Saudi Arabia. They fund terrorism. Women can't drive in Saudi Arabia, have to wear that hijab. I think I'm pronouncing it okay. What's our excuse for that? I just don't get it.
Well, there is hypocrisy, and you are making some very good points to me. But you should know the following, is that we are the single largest provider of food to Cuba even now. I don't know if you know that. The U.S. provided $700 million in food to Cuba last year, more than anybody else, in fact, more than the next several countries combined. So we're not actually hurting Cuba with regard to that. I don't think most people know that we actually provide food to Cuba.
Well, I passed Cuba on a cruise ship going to Cozumel from Fort Lauderdale, and I said, and not that I'm so anxious to see, I don't really like that area of the world anyway, but the point that I'm making is, it seems to me that if the Cuban people started interacting more with Americans, people like me, people like you, there might grow some unrest. I believe that isolating them in this way just hurts the poor individual Cubans.
You know, you make some good points. I understand that. I'm not a diehard. I don't like the Castro brothers because I know that they're dictators and they're thieves, and the people are prisoners on their own island. I'm not certain one way or the other what's best for us at the end of the day, and so I'm open on this one. You make some very good points, Nathan, and I appreciate your calling the Savage Nation. Let's move on to a different topic. In Houston, Texas, Don awaits us on the Savage Nation. Don, please go ahead.
Michael, I want to know why the FBI, why the Justice Department are not involved in investigating Dianne Feinstein.
Because they're not right-wing terrorists. Only the returning military veterans are investigated by the FBI. The answer is because he was vetted by Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer when he was an attorney here in San Francisco. And does that make any sense to you?
Yes.
Savage.
I had a geometry teacher in high school. He had two fingers on his right hand. He was a tough guy. He was an Irishman and real tough, but a very good teacher, and the kind of teacher who made you come up to the blackboard and perform at the blackboard, and if you didn't, he ridiculed you. He didn't curse you out, but he called you a dummy, basically. He says, now, what's the matter with you today, Michael? Is your brain not functioning? That kind of thing. And believe me, you didn't want to wind up in front of that class not knowing your stuff because you didn't want to be humiliated in front of your peers, called your classroom. But in those days, it was very clear. If you were smart, you were smart. If you were stupid, you were dumb. And that was the end of it. And no one changed anything. So to make a long, he had a left hand with five fingers and a right hand with two fingers. And the two fingers were stubs, but he could still put chalk on a board. And when he said to you, the midterm exams are back, he would read out every name and every score publicly. Now, why do you think he did it? Because he understood that by doing well, you were proud of yourself and the kids looked up to you. And by doing poorly, you were ashamed of yourself, boys and girls, and you try to do better. Now, how Mr. W lost his fingers is another interesting story. We all knew about it very fast. I forget his full name, it was Mr. W. And it was whispered in the halls of the high school that he lost his fingers, and I'm not glorifying it, planting a bomb for the IRA. Now, I don't know whether it was true, but it was certainly enough to make us understand not to mess around with this teacher. And we didn't. We respected him. Whether it was true or not is irrelevant. That's who we had for teachers in those days.
Savage.
I think my dog has an itching attack from watching Will Blitzer, because he wants to see the man arrested for sedition and deported. Every time he sees one of these talk show guys on CNN, my dog starts to scratch. Every time he sees Neil Cavuto on Fox, the dog starts to like almost rip his ears out. He can't take it anymore. Teddy understands reality. I have to turn the news off in front of a two-year-old dog. That's what I think is going on. He sees the leprechaun, the dog starts to howl. Had to take the poor dog to the vet today. Oh, God, poor Teddy. You see, sickness comes to everyone. He was scratching now for a month, no matter what we tried. Turns out he has a staph infection on his skin. How does a dog get a staph infection? So I asked the vet, is it transferable to humans? And the answer was, well, they say no, because it's a different Staphylococcus species. I sure hope she's right, I'll tell you the truth. Because the minute I heard it, I started scratching in the nose, the inside of my ear itched, in the nostril. You ever get an itch in the nostril? The minute I heard staph infection of his skin, and I had to give him a steroid shot and put him on antibiotics, the nostril itch, the eyelid, the ear. I could make half of America start to itch right now. A lot of it is suggestive, I'll be honest with you.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
We're playing Hawaiian music because, first of all, I'd like to be there right now, truthfully. But I'm going to wait it out. Great place. It's a great place. Great. I lived there for a number of years, you know. You know what it's like for a kid from New York to go, like, to wind up in Hawaii? I'd never been in a place like that. It was unbelievable. It was like walking into, a heaven itself. So anyway, to make a long story short, we're talking about a turn it off now, a long time ago. You know, when you land in heaven, you think you can do anything. And you have hubris. Hubris is a sense of confidence that only children in the mad have and can understand. But when a grown-up has hubris, it becomes very dangerous. And in my case, that was true. So you get to the islands, and it's a magical time. You never saw sunsets like this. They can break your heart. When you see plumeria blossoms lying on the, you know, I used to bicycle up to the university. I would see plumeria blossoms lying on the sidewalk. I would stop the bicycle and pick up the plumeria blossoms and look at them and smell them. And I'd never seen anything like this. Sure, I had seen rose petals on the fence in the Bronx when I was a little kid. They were soft and beautiful, but this was something unique. The scent was unlike anything I had ever experienced. And so you see these sunsets and these sunrises and all of these things that you have never seen, and birds in the jungles in the back of the rainforest that you never saw or heard before. And you start to get tuned into your own body in a way you've never been tuned in. If you've never lived in the tropics and it's the first time, and you start shedding clothing and shoes and leather and you put it all away, and now you're in flip-flops and then you're in shorts, and all of a sudden at night the breeze comes through your sleeves and you start to become alive in a new way, and you go in the warm water. So you start to feel like the original man, and you buy a sailboat. It's the first thing you do. And so I bought a sloop-rigged boat. She was not catch-rigged. I was mistaken. I remember now. Tarangi was a sloop-rigged sailing vessel about 22 feet long, and it was made of white oak primarily, and had been built in Oregon and sailed out by somebody else to Hawaii. I bought it for nothing, you know, next to nothing. She was in perfect shape and no engine, as I said. So I buy this boat. I put it into the Alawai Yacht Harbor, and that's where I kept it. And, you know, most people who own boats mainly use them to drink on and hang out, and it's as good a thing to do as any. But I was foolish enough to actually want to sail the boat, even though I knew nothing about sailing. And I took it out without an engine. I knew it was pretty easy to get out because the wind was prevailing out of the yacht harbor. And I said, wow, this is great. And so I, with a few friends, I was on a boat alone. They just cast me off, released the lines, pushed me backwards, and there we go, down the Alawai Channel, out into the channel and out into the ocean. I was zipping along with the sail out, and I was zipping along out onto sea, and there I was. I said, this is super. I'm really enjoying myself. Then I realized I didn't know how to get back. I said, how do I turn this thing around if the wind is blowing out? Well, I didn't know how. And I said, well, I better figure this out, because if this keeps up for a while, I'll soon be out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, and there'll be no way back at all. I had no flares, no radio, no engine. All I had was confidence that was bordering on the insane. So the first thing I did was I resorted to common sense, and I dropped the sails, because that, of course, would cut the motion of the boat. I dropped the sails, and using the tiller, I turned the boat around, you know, flip-flop, flip-flop, until I got the boat pointing back towards the land. And then I figured if the wind is blowing against me, there must be a way to go into a prevailing wind and still move against it. I've seen other people do it. And little by little, and lo and behold, I was able to, luckily, I don't know whether it was current or God's hand itself pushed me back into the harbor, but I learned quickly that sailing is not for the amateur. That's all there was to it. So those days are over. But she was my first boat. I don't have a life ring from Tarangi because I didn't even have a life ring. I don't even think I had a life preserver. You know, those were the age. That was an age when people had total, like, madness about what they could do and accomplish in the late 60s. But now I drive a power boat, and it has all sorts of safety equipment on it. Sure, not enough as I should have. But I like power boats a lot better because they're easier to get out. I can get this thing out of the way. It's 45 feet, twin diesels, 19 tons, unladen with fuel and water, and I can go out on it alone and come back on it alone in almost any wind. And that's the good part. You can get out in 12, 15 minutes, and there it is. It's just you and the birds and the water and the land, and that's it. And that's what I go out for now, is just to look at the water and look at the birds and look at the landforms, mainly, and the seals I like. And I can name every bird on the bay. More or less, I know every bird on the bay as a species. Not by name, not like, how you doing, howdy. I don't mean that. Species-wise, I've come to understand that every animal has a personality. Isn't this strange? It's not that the PETA folks are correct. I still eat animals. But they all have a personality when you get to know them. And they all want to live. Dad taught me that everything wants to live. That's how he taught me to respect human life. He said, you'll notice that a cat wants to live, a dog wants to live, a rat wants to live, a mouse wants to live, a bird wants to live. And he had learned that when he had accidentally shot a bird as a kid. Remember, this is odd to a country boy listening to the show. It sounds very weak. But remember, I'm a New York City boy. And to us, it's a different experience than it is to you guys. I respect your ability to hunt for your food. But every animal actually has a personality when you get to know that animal. They're all different. Just as we're all different, every human is unique and like a snowflake. Well, guess what? So are animals. They're all unique. It's amazing when you come to understand that.
Savage.
Did I ever tell you about One-Armed Frank? You haven't heard the One-Armed Frank story. Do I have a moment? My father, I told you, was an antique dealer. May he rest in peace. So we would come home from... Well, he had a guy who came in with one arm. I don't know how the guy became one arm. But he, you know, you didn't know a lot of people with one arms in those days. Even today, they have a, I guess you don't know on one arm people today, they have a fake arm. But he had the arm sewed up, you know, in a suit. So, all right, so you accept him. His name, though, was One-Arm Frank. Because nobody hid reality in those days. Today, it's like, oh, yeah, he's normal. He's just like a... In those days, it was One-Arm Frank. Today, it's like, oh, he's better than normal, man. He's special. Like, if you have one arm, you're better than a guy with two arms today. You know what I mean? If you have no arms and no legs, you're Superman in the politically correct world of today. But in those days, if you were missing an arm, that's what you would name, One-Arm Frank. Whatever your anomaly was, that was your name. It made it easier for the average person to remember everybody. So One-Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but a breath on him. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, then there are very bad breaths, then there are medicinal problems. This had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. It was winter time, and once in a while, my old man would drive One-Arm Frank home, and I'd get stuck in the back, and One-Arm Frank would get shotgun. Now, I want to tell you something. It could be -4 degrees in New York. You had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever have a person like this, Greg? I'm serious, where it's medicinally like a medical problem, where he says anything and the car fills with a noxious fume, where you don't know what to do. You know, are we going past the Trons Meat Factory? No, we're not in Williamsburg. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something on the way? No, it's Frank talking.
Savage.
Someone once said this to me, a professor back in 1970. He said, you know, you're the only person I've ever met. He said, it's astonishing that you can function. He says, you have no barrier between your conscious and your subconscious. You actually function with both at once. So I said, and? So? What's wrong with that? In other words, I've plumbed my depth sufficiently through self-analysis to know who I am, and I'm not ashamed of it. What do I got to hide? I'm not like most people. I mean, well, what's there to hide? When everything I see isn't so pretty. But that's life, you know? Out of the muck, a lotus will grow. We all come from the muck, and we all go back to the muck. We come from the muck. We go back to the muck. What more do you need to know? None of us are demigods. None of us are God. Once you understand that we arise from a smelly ether called the swamp of life, and that is what we go back to, the rest is very easy. Then you stop worrying about if you have an extra little flab on your stomach and a gray hair and a mole on your face. And you suddenly accept yourself for what you are. Then you can wear an undershirt and look at yourself in the mirror and say, that's it, thank God I'm alive. And I got two legs and two arms and two lungs and a beating heart. What more do I need? I'm going to look like a bicycle rider who takes cocaine? Oh, God, what am I talking about? Why are you listening to me? I'm going up and down the scale here. I'm playing the scales for you on the Savage Nation. No, I'm a little upset because I opened a letter just now, a personal letter. I shouldn't have done it during the show. I got all my mail, and I opened one from a relative. It's a shocker. It's a picture of my late father from a year before he died. Photo of Daddy enclosed. Your mother kept it in her bag till she did. No, I never saw this picture. He looked healthy. He shouldn't have died this young. I'm older than he was, and he died. It's eerie. Yeah, I thank God Oscar the cat isn't here. He's liable to curl up next to me, and it will be all be all over. He was in better shape than I am. Are you kidding me? And he died anyway? Not a gray hair on his head. And thin? I put on weight. I got gray hair, and I'm still kicking. Go figure it out. You know how many guys died in their 30s that I knew who were runners? Huffing and puffing with watches, and they vitamin every minute. They looked at their watch. They wouldn't touch this, and they ate perfect. They dropped dead like flies. I don't say don't exercise, but no man is made to run like an Ethiopian bee picker day and night. You're not living in Ethiopia at 12,000 feet. That's why they win these races everywhere. That's where they run at high altitudes. You don't. Every year there's a few blowouts here with the San Francisco, what do they call it? Marathon, the marathon. Every year they got someone dropping dead before the finish line. If you want to run, enjoy yourself. This too shall pass. I have a whole different theory of exercise at a certain point in your life. Now, remember, I wrote the book on nutrition, and I also exercise moderately, but the key word is moderately. this excessive, like you're on a treadmill, heart attackville. It's worse than sitting in front of a television and eating Doritos. And I'm telling you, no human being has made the... You ever see old men running like that? It's insanity, total insanity. Show me in nature where a man runs like that after the age of 40, unless he's being chased by a predator who wants to burn his house down. Nobody runs like that if they don't have to. What did the great American writer say? Mark Twain. He said, "I get all my exercise going to the funerals of my more athletic friends." It was funny. It worked for him. The guy was, for him, it worked. I'm sure if he ran, he would have been dead at 30. I'll never forget when I stopped running the day. Are you interested in any of this? Or do you want to talk about home invasion? I'm in a sweat from the whole story already. I ate nuts during the break. I got this picture. Now I'm having palpitations. I think I'll have a pizza for dinner tonight and beer. Nah, I think tonight I'm going to drive into the city. I'm not in the city. I'm not in San Francisco now. I'm out in the suburban location, one of my Arafatian houses. I have many locations. I don't know where I'm going to be the next night. That way, if anyone, they don't know where I'm going to, because I don't know where I'm going to broadcast from or where I'm going to sleep. I have several locations. I have to. That's what the liberals are today. I have to watch out for them because they're all psychopaths. Every last one of them belongs in a mental hospital. Or in a straitjacket. That's all. Look how they treat. Forget it. I don't want to go into bashing liberals. It's been done too often, and I did it better than anybody else. Oh, let's move on. Now you see, I'm what do you call it when you talk and talk and he looked good. Look at this. I can't get it out of my head. I shouldn't have looked at these pictures. He was, God bless him. A lot of good it did him. The wife, black hair, thin, kept in shape and dead. And what about Winston Churchill? He sat in the bathtub drinking brandy and smoking cigars. It hurt him? Could you picture him running around, let's say, England during World War II, saying, I got to do a stress break now? Our president, all our NBA-like leaders, they all run, they're in perfect shape, and they can't think. He sat with a brandy and a cigar in a bathtub. He was able to lead Britain through the darkest days of World War II. How is that? How's that possible? Stop with the sobriety, have a drink, and sit in the bathtub with a cigar. Maybe you can save the country. You'll have some insights, like take the handcuffs off the men, number one, and tell the liberals to go to hell, number two. That might save America. KNEW, San Fran. What? Someone from England sent me a new one. I use San Francisco, San Francisco. San Fran. She called us something else, a friend from somewhere, a long email. San Fran. I can't remember why I bring it up. Going back to the Lower East Side of New York. Dad owns a small antiques mart. Little old Michael's cleaning bronzes in the back, and there's Louis the Bum from the Bowery, who in those days, he was a drunk. He wasn't a bum. He worked. Dad would have him in on the weekends, and he'd clean the bronzes and whatever he did down there. I loved Louis. Louis was a great guy. But now you got to understand, this guy was a stoned alcoholic of the old school. Skinny like a rail. White guy, skinny like a rail, smoked like unfiltered cigarettes. But one of the nicest guys on earth. He wears the rubber apron. He's cleaning downstairs, does the bronzes. Then, of course, I took over because Dad wanted cheap child labor, and where else are you going to get it from his son, you know? So I'm doing the thing. So I got to know Louis over the years, and he taught me various things. Like once we had Louis over to the house. I'll never forget it. I was so proud that my father took this guy who I liked all the way out to Queens and invited him to dinner. I don't know what came over. Maybe it was Thanksgiving or whatever. And Louis had dinner with us at the table, and the guy was surprisingly erudite, and he knew things. And like after dinner, we did games, and Louis the drunk showed me how to bend nails. He showed me mind over matter. He took a nail and he showed me that if you put your fingers, blah, 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 and put your mind on it and keep up the pressure, the nail would bend. I was shocked because I was a skinny kid with little hands, and I bent the nail. And he taught me mind over matter, but it was all molecular because you put the heat and the pressure, blah, 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 eventually that nail is going to bend. But I learned in life it's the same thing. It's all willpower, okay? Now there's another element to the story. So Louis is this kind of guy, interesting, but an alcoholic, and this and that. Years go by. He lives alone in Williamsburg. In those days, Williamsburg was like a slum, zero, you know, oilcloth city, leftover apartments from the last century. No one wanted to be there but the poor. So he lives there alone. He's very lonely. He gets a monkey. He wants a monkey. Now, out of the world, nobody in those days had a monkey. Dogs, yes. Cats, yes. No. Who had a monkey in those days? Louis gets a monkey. But Louis don't just get a spider monkey, one of the skinny little monkeys. Louis gets a woolly monkey. Now, woolly monkeys are already strong. They got a chest on them. They got strong hands. And Louis's in love with this monkey. For a couple of months, they're inseparable. Wherever he goes, there's the monkey. And the monkey's on his shoulder and where he's cleaning and he's happy. Now, Louis was the kind of guy that if he went to a bar in the Lower East Side, I remember the name to this day, named Hamel and Corn. Whatever money he made for my father, he'd take 2 minutes later, he'd be in the bar. And he'd throw money in a jukebox, and he would whistle and sing, and he'd buy everyone drinks till he was broke. He'd stumble out in the street. He would get hit by a car, sleep on a barrel. He didn't care. He lived for the booze, and that was it, but he had a heart of gold. So Louis gets the monkey, finally has someone to fill his empty nights. And as I say, they were inseparable. Well, as time went on, we get a call. Louis's in the hospital. He's dying. What? The monkey went crazy in his apartment, attacked him, and almost ripped him to pieces. And he suffered for 6 months in the hospital. I don't know which hospital, probably Bellevue, because that's where they all wound up. And the monkey went at him. And you don't know what a monkey's like when it goes crazy. You try to stop an enraged monkey without a weapon. He ripped his neck. He ripped his face. He ripped his arms. He ripped his leg. He ripped his crotch. He ripped his behind. Louis was ripped up pretty bad. And eventually, he took the monkey. I think he grabbed it and threw it out of the window. It just shows you. If he hadn't have done it, he'd be dead today. Okay, but a liberal today probably would have tried to talk to the monkey. Louis knew that the instincts had to kick in. It was him or the monkey, and he decided it was better him than the monkey. He didn't consult a liberal book on how to deal with a crazed monkey. He just fought with it and killed it. I think that's what the bottom line is here. But the point is that even a lonely drunk needs companionship at night. In his case, he found the monkey. It was probably the right thing for him to do. So right now you could see that Louis was a pioneer in a way, in a sense that he understood that monkeys were dangerous long before they did in India when they turned him into a sacred animal. And that's the Louis and the monkey story on the Savage Nation. You got to admit it wasn't bad. It's nicely entertaining. It's almost 6 o'clock here on the West Coast, almost 9 o'clock on the East Coast. And that's it. That's the story. The bottom line is don't get a monkey as a pet. They're wild animals.
Savage.